Weeks ago, we started a series on the parables of Jesus. And I have focused my messages on how Jesus used the illustration of money or wealth to drive home his message to his followers. In the first parable, we reviewed Matthew 13, verses 44 to 46, where we had two different people who found various treasures of great value and sold everything they had to attain the treasure. In other words, they surrendered everything. And we found out that there was a cost of becoming a disciple of Jesus. There's a cost of entering into his kingdom. And we would be wise to understand that cost to the fullest. Now, 2 weeks ago, we reviewed another parable of Jesus in Matthew 20, verses 1 to 16, where a landowner, a wealthy landowner, paid generous wages to his employees for their labor. It didn't matter how long they worked, they all got paid the same. And Jesus was describing how grace works in the sphere where God rules. Now today, we'll be reviewing another parable of Jesus in Luke chapter 16, where the proper handling of money or wealth is a topic of discussion. Now before we start, let's remember that Scripture, the Holy Bible, emphatically condemns the love of money. 1 Timothy 6:10a says, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." Matthew 6:24, the second half of the verse says, "Like today, you cannot serve both God and money." And Matthew 16, 19 to 21, it's one of my favorite verses. It says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy and where thieves can break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also." Now in Luke 16, Jesus tells a parable that echoes and illustrates the admonition of money's usage, but he does it in a very unusual way. It's the story of a lying, cheating, unfaithful manager who is found out and told that he's going to be fired. He then shows resourcefulness and cunningly uses his master's wealth to buy friendship that will be useful for cushioning his fall from good graces. Now, you might be wondering how it is possible to build any kind of positive spiritual principle on such an unethical actions of an unrighteous manager. Can any good teaching really come from a patently bad example? Well, this is no mistake. Jesus was very adept at illustrating his points in parables. And so today we're going to review three major points. We're going to look at the story, the surprise, or the shocker, and the explanation that Jesus gives. So let's look at the story. Now, the main character in this parable is a dishonest manager. The manager's own actions reveal that he was wicked, conniving, and shamelessly brazen in his evil doing. This probably, like most things, starts out small. Isn't that the case? If people lie, well, it's just a little lie. Then it grows. This probably started out small. but it began to progress as time went on. Now, his downfall began because he handled his master or his boss's wealth in a way that the Bible describes in verse 1 as wasteful. I'm sure in our lives we've all been accused of being wasteful at some point with our time, with our talents, or with our money. It's not a great characteristic to be labeled as wasteful. Now, he must, though, have figured he was free to spend extravagantly because his rich boss would never check up on him. But a credible accusation was brought against the man that reached his wealthy boss's ears. And in verse 2, the scene says this: "So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.'" The manager now knew it was impossible to cover up his dishonesty. His wasteful management now was going to be fully documented, and he would be discredited and disgraced. The manager himself now reasons, "What shall I do?" In verse 3, it says, "My master's taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm too ashamed to beg. What to do?" So he opted to do what he was good at: cheat the rich man even more. He cooks the books in favor of the people who owed the master money. He forgives large debts, in effect stealing from the master in order to win friendship and purchase favors, thereby ensuring that when the rich man finally tosses him out the door, he would be received by the people who would now be in his debt. It tells us that plainly in verses 4 through 7 in our scripture today. There's really no way, no positive way to put a good spin on this man's dishonesty. Remember, in the story that's being explained, Jesus himself described the man as dishonest. There are no mitigating facts or hidden details that the man's immoral or unethical actions can be in a better light. But we must remember that Jesus was teaching a parable. This was not real life. Jesus made up the story and the facts of record. Now, if we are shocked and surprised at the ending, that's what he intended. Remember, his original audience was his own disciples, and they would have been shocked and surprised also. But this was a discipleship message for his believers. So let's look a little more closely at the story. The rich man was wealthy, obviously very wealthy. He was not a small businessman. He was so rich that he does not even get involved in the day-to-day operations of his business. Instead, he hires a manager to run the business by proxy. It's clearly an enormous operation because of the debts owed to the man are sizable. The rich man probably lived on some estate, some distance from the business, and he did not have firsthand knowledge of what the manager was doing. Now, it is likewise clear that the manager himself was skilled and resourceful. He no doubt had most people's respect, at least at the beginning. He would not have been put in such a position unless he had the rich man's confidence. The rich man's faith in the manager's skill and integrity was such that he entrusted the man with full control of his assets and his affairs. The boss might never have discovered the manager's mismanagement if word had not come to him from some other source. It must have been very bad news to the rich man when an accusation was brought to him that this man, this manager, was wasting his goods. Now, the rich man acts immediately. He demands a full accounting from the manager and tells him once that is finished, and he's finished making his report, his employment would be terminated. The manager just needed to wrap up his remaining business and prepare to leave the company. Now, frankly speaking, or let me rephrase that, Frankie speaking, this was a very bad business decision on part of the owner. I personally would have walked the manager out the door as soon as I knew what was going on, and I would have tried to figure out what damages that he did later. I can tell you in my own personal career in working, unfortunately, I had to do that with two or three people. It's not a fun experience. It's not a fun experience finding out employees who work for you lie to you, take money, and do other activities that cause them to be terminated and walked out the door. It's not a fun thing. But that's what I would have done if I was the rich man in this story. I'm not really sure why you would give the manager extra time to do more damage, but that's what happened in this story. Now, while the manager was preparing his final report, he suddenly has an idea. Unfortunately, since he was good at dishonesty, he would use the remnants of his delegated authority while he still had it to reduce the rich man's debtors' obligations. Thus, by reducing their debts, they would owe him great favors when he was booted out the door. Here was his scheme. He worked out for his benefits. Before the debtors even learned that he was losing his job and going to be fired, he called them all into the office, one by one. And he struck deals and discounted their debts by amounts ranging from 20 to 50%. This was a huge favor to the debtors, and the manager thus made the master's borrowers indebted to him personally. Now, strictly speaking, the manager still had the legal authority to agree to the discounts that he negotiated. He was still in that job. However, his actions were reprehensible. He was already being fired for wasting his manager's resources. This discounting scheme was nothing more than embezzlement. This was a deliberate misappropriation of the manager's resources. And the manager's actions was shameless. He was concerned about only one person, himself. And don't we hear that every day in society? You need to be concerned about you. Me, myself, and I. You need all the best. You need everything to be just the way it's great for you. That's what we hear every day. It's all about you. It's all about us. We see that in this story. Now, the surprise, or the shock, is now the story takes a startling turn. In Luke 6, verse 8, 16, verse 8, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. Up to this point, it was easy to sympathize with the rich man, but the fact that he admired his employee's unethical strategy suggests that the rich man himself might be a man of questionable character and integrity. But notice the language is very specific. He doesn't applaud the manager's lack of honor. What he commends is the manager's forward-looking ingenuity. Now, the Greek word translated shrewdly means prudently or cunningly. The word gives the idea of being keen-witted but cautious. The cleverness of the scheme was what elicited the master's admiration. The manager took careful advantage of a brief opportunity to manipulate resources in his power to achieve ends that were advantageous to him over the long run. He used the master's resources to do those debtors immense good, and he won their friendship with lavish generosity, and not just one debtor, but all the debtors. Thus, he maximized his options and his opportunities for the future. The manager showed amazing foresight because he wasn't thinking about how to cover up or excuse his past transgressions. They were all documented. Just how to secure his future. Now, Jesus, at this point, starts to give us the explanation of what he was trying to drive home to his disciples. He says in the last part of verse 8, he says, "For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light." What he's saying there is that sinners tend to be more clever and forward-thinking and diligent with regard to their short-term temporal well-being than the saints are in focusing on laying up treasures in heaven. It's true. Ungodly people bring much energy, skill, and focus into acquiring earthly comforts for the remaining years of this life because, if you're an unbeliever, that's all you have to look forward to. Now consider the situation of people preparing.